brutal military assault on Gaza. The initiative, dubbed Stop Slaughtering Children in Gaza, was carried out by AOI, an association of NGOs operating in the international solidarity and cooperation sector, representatives of trade unions and other civil society organizations, together with members of Italy's Palestinian community, attended the demonstration.
You cannot be a member of the United Nations, signing accords and voting resolutions that are enforced only if they suit specific interests. This way, the credibility of the institutions is badly damaged.
Palestinian authorities have reported that more than 6,500 miners have been killed in Israeli airstrikes on the Gaza Strip so far. Earlier this month, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that Gaza was becoming a graveyard for children, with hundreds of girls and boys killed or injured every day. As 1.6 million Gazans have been displaced from their homes, many forced to move to the south of the Strip, there are concerns that a large number of them may end up in refugee camps.
You know the resilience of the Palestinian people. We will not leave our land. This is our land. This is our right. This was very clear from our people in Gaza. They prefer to live, you know, on their destroyed houses rather than to live outside of Gaza.
Some at the demonstration said an increasing number of people in Italy are choosing to stand with the Palestinians despite the mainstream media coverage of the conflict being completely biased in favor of Israel.
I have stopped following the Western media outlets for quite some time. They should be ashamed. We have the right to be informed honestly and truthfully. Give us the truth, and citizens will then choose which side to stand for. I'm disgusted. These media are all complicit in the mass slaughtering of Palestinians.
Hundreds of demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have been held in cities and towns across Italy since the start of the war in Gaza over 8 weeks ago. Pro-Palestine rallies were held in Forlì, Ravenna, Cremona, Asti, Reggio Emilia, Genoa and Piacenza last weekend alone. Max Civili, Rome.
Scholars and thinkers have come together in a meeting at Tehran University to review a 2015 letter sent by Iran's leader to the youth in Europe and the United States. The meeting discussed how the leader's vision is finally being materialized in 2023. In the letter written in January of 2015, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei asked young people in the U.S. and Europe to attain first-hand knowledge of Islam. Ayatollah Khamenei asked youngsters not to allow the states to hypocritically introduce their own recruited terrorists as representatives of Islam. He also points out that with the mass development of social media, people can go beyond their geographical borders and try to view different cultures and religions objectively. Such pieces of advice from the leader have once again been brought to attention as the youth around the globe are showing interest in Islam after witnessing the resistance and faith of the Palestinian people in the face of the Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
Instead of money and materialistic possessions, the youth in Western nations can grab onto a more soothing and inclusive philosophy by forming affiliations with Islam.
Some other scholars called the leader's letter a fatherly address, aiming to uproot the xenophobia that oppressive states usually spread in a bid to justify their violence towards the people of a certain land or ethnicity.
The fact is that these letters were seeds that was put on the ground for it to grow and to sort of bring liberation and knowledge and awareness and awakening right across the world, especially with the children, with the youngsters, and youngsters in particular, because they are the future. The fact of the matter is that what has happened in the last month and a half since 7th of October reinforced and indeed brought into practice what the letter was trying to achieve. The awakening of people about the fact that Palestinians are the most oppressed and being deliberately massacred in front of our eyes, day in, day out.
Since October 7th, various Western media outlets have tried to justify Israeli crimes in Gaza. Accordingly, they have largely attempted to ignore the vast distress brought upon the 2.3 million people in Gaza in recent weeks. Young people, however, have been taking to the streets in support of Palestine in large numbers after finding out about Israeli atrocities through social media. One of the main goals behind the letter by the leader of the Islamic Revolution to the Western youth was to bypass Western media that do not present facts to their audience, society, as well as young people in Europe and the United States. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
Pro-Palestinian protesters filled the streets of the Yemeni capital to praise the success of the Palestinian resistance movement and condemn the Israeli regime. Protesters hailed resistance efforts, which they say delivered a humiliating defeat to the Israeli army. Yemenis said they will continue to fight alongside the Palestinians until victory.
We tell the Zionists and the Americans that the Yemeni people who just came out of an eight-year battle and a strangling blockade, that we have put all this aside and are stepping forward to stand with our Palestinian brothers and the Palestinian cause, because it is our main cause. We tell the Palestinians, you are not alone.
The demonstration also praised the Yemeni army's resilience in taking meaningful military actions, which pressured the Israeli regime to accept a ceasefire. Yemeni operations consisted of launching a series of drone and ballistic missiles to occupied Palestine and the latest capture of the Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea.
We will close Bab al-Mandeb and we will seize the Israeli and American ships until they stop the aggression on our Palestinian brothers and the resistance in Gaza. We will strike with missiles and the drones. Our missiles will even target the Zionists inside Gaza so that we can abolish the Israeli entity.
We are here to support our armed forces and the naval and air force and all of their military efforts, including the striking of a U.S. spy drone. We also praise the latest operation which captured an Israeli ship in the Red Sea. This was a huge blow to the Zionists.
Despite the announcement of a ceasefire agreement in Palestine, the Yemeni army says it will continue its monitoring of the Red Sea to prevent or capture any ships linked to the Israeli regime. The Palestinian resistance has praised the Yemeni army's stance in supporting Palestinians and for taking decisive military actions against the Israeli regime. The Yemeni armed forces spokesperson has also reiterated that attacks against the Israeli entity will continue until the genocide ends. Yusuf Baudi, Sana'a.
In a remarkable display of unity and solidarity, the Palestine Freedom March took place in the heart of Lahore, just a few miles from the U.S. consulate. The proximity of the march to the U.S. consulate added significance to it, as the rally sought to convey message not only to the international community, but specifically to the United States, a key supporter of Israel in the war on Gaza.
Israel ek fascist.
The whole world now understands that Israel is a fascist regime that has occupied Palestinian territories. Israel sheds the blood of Palestinians to continue its existence in the world. The Israeli policy of oppression has been defeated now. These worldwide protests indicate that the concept of peace has won and the narrative of oppressors has been defeated.
The convergence of the people from different backgrounds symbolized a shared commitment to the Palestinian cause, underscoring the gravity of the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip.
People around the world, including Pakistanis, are on the streets and condemning the U.S. and its illegitimate child Israel for their actions in Gaza. Due to increasing public resentment, the U.S. and Israel are under tremendous public pressure, and the real face of the Zionist regime has been exposed in the international community. No oppressor can resist this public pressure anymore.
The event not only highlighted the immediate concern for Gaza, but also exemplified the broader call for justice and peace in the region.
The Palestine issue is a matter of honor for the Muslim community now. The events of Karbala are being repeated in Gaza. They are killing men, women, and children, considering Palestinians to be alone. But Israel and the U.S. should not forget that they are not alone. The whole of humanity stands with the people of Palestine.
United in their demand for peace and justice, the participants of Palestine Freedom March fervently called for a lasting ceasefire in Gaza.
The ongoing protest rallies, boycott of pro-Israeli products, and systematic fundraising initiatives are the examples of how deeply the Pakistani society is committed to helping Palestinian people who are confronting Israeli aggression in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Lahore.
A group of Italian journalists, representatives of media unions and organizations, gathered at the Roman Press Association in Rome to discuss how the ongoing conflict in the Gaza Strip has been biasedly covered by the media so far. The initiative was organized by the No Gag Network, a group that advocates for freedom of expression in Italy, as Palestinian and international journalists trapped in the coastal territory continue to be slaughtered by the Israeli occupation forces.
As of today, we don't know if these journalists have been executed or they have been killed in their homes together with their beloved ones during the Israeli bombardments. And I ask you, would that make any difference? It is horrific anyway.
During the meeting, journalists agreed that a war needs field reporting, condemning Israel's refusal to heed calls to allow independent reporters to access Gaza for direct testimony. Since October 9, the 2.3 million residents of Gaza have been experiencing a devastating near-complete communications blackout.
Killing a journalist is a war crime, and we call on the International Criminal Court to proceed with the examination into what's happening in Gaza.
The Italian journalists also relaunched a petition already signed by 200 French, Palestinian and Lebanese journalists demanding access to Gaza and the protection of journalists covering the Israeli onslaught on the Strip.
La libertà d'informazione viene seppellita sotto le macerie.
Freedom of expression has been buried under Gaza's rubble. Only journalists embedded with the IOF are in Gaza, operating under the observation of Israeli commanders in the field.
Speaking of freedom of expression, the future of journalism in Italy looks bleak. There has been a big question mark over the credibility of Italian media outlets in recent years, as the sharp divide between the mainstream media and a large chunk of public opinion has been growing deeper.
The divide is getting deeper and deeper. Much of the public opinion does not follow mainstream TVs and newspapers anymore. They have totally lost trust in them. And it is understandable. The media keeps saying the conflict in Gaza started on October 7.
Meanwhile, Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has urged Israel to use the four-day ceasefire in Gaza to carefully consider what the international perception is of its offensive against the Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
When it comes to the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, many things were shattered. One was Israel's so-called invincibility on the military front. The other, which Iran's leader has pointed out too, is the U.S. plan for the region, which fell apart due to the operation. Well, in this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at the different schemes that the U.S. had, like backing Israel when it came to the Palestinian issue, or the plans it had to take over Syria, or helping Israel defeat Lebanon, all of which have failed. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Rick Sterling, investigative journalist, joins us from Walnut Creek, California. And Brett Jonkers, historian and journalist, joins us from Hasselt over in Belgium. Welcome to you both. Rick Sterling, let me first start with you. We're looking at statements that Iran's leader has made, and in the overall scheme of things, pointing to the American agenda in the region, of which he has said that the Operation Al-Aqsa flood actually disrupted U.S. policies. First of all, do you agree or not? And second of all, which U.S. policies do you think that at least ranks in the highest when it comes to the statements made there by Iran's leader?
Well, so far we haven't seen many policy changes from the Biden administration, unfortunately. But what I think is very true is that the public perception of Israel and the Middle East generally is undergoing big changes. Previously, there was across the board support for Israel, and that has fallen dramatically. One description is that it has cratered. Just a couple of weeks ago, two-thirds of the American public was calling for a ceasefire. And yet in Congress, only 11% of congressional representatives are supporting a ceasefire. And in the Senate, only 3 out of 100 are supporting a ceasefire. And the Biden administration, of course, has largely gone along. It's it made some suggestions to Netanyahu, but it's been largely devoid of calling for any substantial change. So I think
can I just jump in quickly here and ask you a quick question? When Biden doesn't agree to a ceasefire, does that mean he wants the war to continue?
Effectively, yes. What we're seeing is the continuing influence of the Israel lobby. But that is undergoing a big change now. We know in 1967, during the Six-Day War, one of the effects of that was to build up this mythology of Israeli security and military dominance. And that won it a lot of support, especially among the Jewish population in the United States. What we've seen since October 7 is that mythology has exploded. We're seeing a lot of Jewish Americans who are now ashamed of Israel, and especially among the youth, there's a lot of activism. It's been a sea change in the public perception.
All right, this public perception, Brent Yonkers, is something that perhaps many, as our guest there said, maybe many were not aware of or were not educated enough, or did not have the knowledge when it came to the conflict between Israel and Palestine, which brings me to another statement made by Iran's leader, that what has happened in the last 50 days or so is what Israel has done in the last 75 years, where it has violated Palestinian rights, settlements, he said, for example, as one example, he said, which they have killed anyone standing up to them, including women and children. Do you think that was part of the driving force then, based on the explanation given there by the Iran's leader, where many have come out supporting Palestine?
Well, I think indeed we see a much wider support base nowadays in the West, I mean, in particular, a much wider support base for Palestine than has been the case in the past decades. As an activist for the Palestinian cause myself, it has always been very frustrating to see the immense power and influence that the Zionist lobby and just the Zionist influencers, Zionist politicians have on decision-making in Europe and in North America. Now, the influence on decision-making has not really changed much at all, because this happens behind the scenes and at the top echelon of society. But we see that in these societies, in the West, the pressure from the bottom layers of society, the pressure from the streets, from the people themselves, has exploded far beyond what has been thought possible, I think, up until just a few months ago, because of the sheer cruelty and brutality of the Zionist entity, and of course the fact that media has now a far wider potential to break through the mainstream media monopoly than it had before. Nowadays, if you want to see what is going on in Gaza, you just have to go on on social media, you just have to go online, and you can find the confirmed and vetted reports and images even of the massacres being committed by the Zionist entity. The mainstream media might not show it, but people know where to find it, and people are enraged by it. And so that's why you see this increase, not just increased support for a ceasefire and increased support for, you know, the stop the bombing in Gaza, but an increased support for the Palestinian cause in general, because people start to research, people start to investigate. That is exactly the reason why so many Western governments have gotten so worried about banning the slogan "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free," because this was the slogan that was chanted by thousands, hundreds of thousands of people across Europe, not just across the world where you expect it, but also by the people in countries like Germany and France and the United Kingdom and the United States, where, you know, anti-Zionist activism was very difficult to organize up until recently. So Hamas has, and not just Hamas, but the resistance in general, has won a significant victory in terms of the popular support and the popular framing and the popular understanding of the Palestinian liberation struggle.
Well, I'm very curious. I'm stuck on Rick Sterling, the fact that you said many Jewish Americans, I think you said, are ashamed of being Jewish. I think that's what you said. I'm wondering to what degree is that evidence, and how you have either reached that conclusion or read it, or maybe you're seeing it, or maybe you heard it from other people, how that has come about for you to make that claim right now.
Yeah, one clarification. No, I didn't say that they're ashamed of being Jewish. They're proud of being Jewish, but they're ashamed of Israel and ashamed of Zionism.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
And they're coming out and really underscoring the difference between Judaism and Zionism, which, of course, is a fundamental difference. The conflict is not over religion or ethnicity. It's over land and justice. So I think that's an important change, and I do believe that there's growing numbers of people across the board. Of course, the Arab community in the United States is very, very significant and large, and they have been incredibly mobilized, as well as the young Jewish population. We had an action here in Oakland, California. That was primarily organized by young Jewish activists. 700 people blockaded the Oakland Federal Building, with 600 of them being arrested. This was unprecedented. So there's a sea change happening in that regard.
Okay. Well, if there's a sea change happening in that regard, Brett Yonkers, what about the fact that you have the U.S. enabling Israel by providing the weapons to commit the war crimes that basically we witnessed the genocide unfolding on our screens, which then brought out people such as, for example, Jewish Americans, to then be ashamed of Israel? Shouldn't then the U.S. also be looked in that vein?
Well, yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of people within the rising Palestine solidarity movement and the campaigns tied to it are understanding that as well. Of course, we have to bear in mind that at the end of the day, the Zionist entity is a relatively small country when it comes to, or entity when it comes to territory, even when it comes to population. They at this point, they only house about half of the entire population of Jewish people in the world. So we're talking about, I believe, 7 million Israeli Jews, which it's a little bit ironic considering the fact that they consider themselves to be the quote-unquote Jewish homeland for all Jews to go there. But we have to understand, and I think a lot of people understand that nowadays, this is all part of a greater cabal, for the lack of a better terminology, because they are connected. It is all connected to the military-industrial complex of the United States. It is connected to a very specific sort of death cult situation that is happening among some evangelical Christians, as they call themselves, which is dubious, within the United States. It is connected to the oil industry. It's connected to the power, to the military command structure of the United States itself. And it's connected to the wider geopolitical interests of the West. I mean, we have to always bear in mind that the early Zionists, including Theodor Herzl, the founder of the ideology himself, they were always very keen on pointing out the fact that the Zionist venture was a colonialist venture that was aimed, amongst other things, to bring a quote-unquote civilized Western society into the, again, quote-unquote barbaric East. This is part and parcel of Zionism from the very beginning. Without Western support, without the support of the United States in particular, but also of NATO in general, of the UK, of the European Union, without all this support, the entity of Israel would collapse practically overnight. Probably, they will probably fight tooth and nail to defend what they have conquered and what they have captured. But without Western support, this will falter. And that is why you see a lot of this Palestine solidarity movement are aimed not just at protesting against Israel, but against taking practical steps to support, to end all support for Israel. And this can take very concrete measures, such as trying to stop arms shipments, which has happened, I believe, in Italy and in Spain, not quite recently. But even things that are, let's say, a bit more wider away, further away from the military part, such as here in Belgium, where the most important university, there is a significant movement now that is asking for the complete cessation of all collaboration between Belgian universities and the academic world of Israel, just to further isolate it in the way that has been done back in the 1980s sure. with the apartheid regime in South Africa.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, we need to also talk about the plans that the U.S. had when it comes to West Asia, some call it the Middle East. But before we get to that, I have to ask you this, Rick Sterling, because this has made some news. The U.S. actress and activist Cynthia Nixon going on a hunger strike, along with what apparently are some other activists and also state legislators in front of the White House. She is very well aware of what is happening to the Gazans. Now, this is not to highlight her, but to highlight what she's saying. But in addition to that, when you have she's one of many actors and actresses that have come out, does the U.S. president and the White House realize the type of support worldwide that Palestine has gained and how tainted the image of Israel has become? And I use this as one example. Do you think that this has rattled their cages or not?
I don't think they fully realize it, but they definitely partially realize it because the protests have been taking place all over North America. You had the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau, who was basically disrupted from a restaurant dinner he was having in Vancouver by activists. You've got President Biden was in the San Francisco Bay Area a week ago, a protester shut down the Bay Bridge, which is a major transit point for probably half a million drivers every day. They shut it down for 4 hours. You had a traffic jam that lasted, that went for 10 or 20 miles. So they are definitely aware of it. And I think the individual efforts that celebrities are doing is part of it, but it's the mass action primarily around the world, and including in the United States and including in New York and elsewhere.
This notion of the Middle East, or West Asia, as we call it, Ray Yonkers, that Iran's leader has said that the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood actually, in a sense, ruined the plans that the U.S. has had for the wider region. Well, we can see what it has had done when it comes to supporting Israel vis-a-vis the Palestinian cause. But we're looking at other aspects here. In one of its statements, it mentioned Syria. It mentioned Yemen. It mentioned the plans that it had in that regard, and also Lebanon, I should say, not Yemen, Lebanon, regarding Hezbollah, standing up to the force as one of the leading resistance groups. Do you think that the U.S. Has an interest after being defeated in these areas to continue with what it's doing and the participation it has in West Asia?
I think there is definitely a continuation of this imperialist interest in the West Asian region. And unfortunately, the leadership, the leading echelons of American society, they live in an ivory tower in a way in which they listen to their own geopolitical analysts, they listen to their economists, they listen to the war hawks, they think about how they can further increase the reach of U.S. empire rather than look at the facts on the ground necessarily, and rather than being able to really grasp the reality as it exists. However, we have seen that the United States, when really push comes to shove and when they are forced to reckon with the facts as they present themselves, that they will be forced to sometimes make humiliating retreats, such as happened in Afghanistan. This has been the longest war in U.S. history. Took them 20 years, countless of trillions of dollars. Costed, of course, hundreds of thousands of lives, unfortunately, mostly on the Afghan side. But in the end, the Americans withdrew, ignominiously so. Like, it was, started to look like the retreat from Vietnam back in the day. It was chaotic and it was absolutely humiliating for them, but they had to do it. And they knew when they had to come to the realization that retreat was the only option. Mm-hmm. I think that's why you see there is a clash coming, or already happening, brewing between the different factions within the elites. Joe Biden represents the old school, let's say, of American imperial policy. That's why he wants to basically bring America back to the way in which it was, let's say, as a leader within a unipolar world order. That's what his goal was. But Joe Biden is, I think, one of the last representatives of a dying breed of U.S. politicians and more realistic politicians who realize that there's something has to change. They are trying to pivot U.S. policies in a different direction. Donald Trump, for all his flaws, mm-hmm. was one of the politicians who was trying to pivot away from the constant imperialist meddling and constant invasions everywhere. So it's going to be very interesting to see, of course, how the 2024 elections will go and which faction within the U.S. elite is going to power. But I think for West Asia in particular, it is probably going to be beneficial, even if only because the United States has more to fear nowadays from countries such as China and Russia, and will probably try to dedicate more attention in the Pacific region as a result.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that has stood in the minds of at least Palestinian leadership, and also the minds of many, is when the Prime Minister Netanyahu, Rick Sterling, picked, and he loves his props at the UN, we must say, when he picked up that another piece of cardboard where the country of Palestine was not on it. We had the Palestinian Foreign Minister in the UN Security Council meeting today talk about that. We had the PA ambassador to the UN also make reference to that. So that is something that is standing out. This is part of the project of the new Middle East, I think, in the context of maybe Israel with the backing of the U.S. Do you think that this is something that Israel and the U.S. actively pursue together? Or is it an Israeli plan where the U.S. backs Israel on that, given the fact that Netanyahu presented it in the form and manner that he did? Are we talking about two different scenarios here, which both spell out a new Middle East in their words?
I think they're failing on both counts. The U.S. and Israel are pretty much joined at the hip. But I think Israel is seeing, the more far-sighted people are going to be seeing, that the U.S. is in decline, the empire is in decline, and, you know, there may be big changes in Israel. Hopefully they'll come to realize that there has to be dramatic change. I mean, in the United States, there's an influential columnist at the New York Times named Thomas Friedman, and he's been saying that he's been cautioning ever since, after October 7th, that Israel has to accept a two-state solution. They have to stop the settlements in the West Bank and so forth. Obviously, that's not happening under a Netanyahu administration, and as we know, Israel is extremely divided, and Netanyahu is if he loses his position right now, he may go to prison. Israel is in a state of crisis, and the U.S. is in a state of decline. Mm. We can see all over the world. I mean, they failed in the effort to topple the government in Damascus. The agreement between the reconciliation, to the extent that it exists, between Saudi Arabia and Iran is extremely important, China being the broker of that. So I think people throughout West Asia are seeing that the U.S. is in decline, their power and influence is on the wane, and they're going to be acting accordingly. And this Al-Aqsa flood is going to be seen, I think, in history as an important milestone, as a tipping point in that process.
So I'm going to save the last question for you, Brent Yonkers. Isn't it ironic that when we have seen what has unfolded in the Gaza carnage, in this genocidal war that Israel has conducted, that has been backed by the U.S. Militarily, especially, maybe even in terms of the war scenarios, that Iran has been at the forefront of the Palestinian cause since the days of Imam Khomeini, who made it a priority to realize the Palestinian situation, that is now considered, Iran that is, for the U.S., to be somewhat of an enemy, where Iran has been sounding the alarm all this time.
Yeah, it is an ironic development, and it goes to show that there is a significant fear of the influence that the Iranian Islamic Revolution of 1979 had on the wider region, because whenever there is talk about Palestine or about any form of resistance in the wider West Asia region, for that matter, just think of Lebanon, Syria, and Yemen as well, for example, or the Western media, mainstream media, always point fingers at Iran immediately, as if Iran is like, they like to portray Iran as a counter-U.S., as if Iran has a sort of imperial ambition within the wider West Asia region, which, of course, is not true. But the reason why they like doing this is because the 1979 revolution has had reverberation in the wider area in order to increase the resilience and resistance, in this case, for example, of the Palestinian people. I mean, movements like the Islamic Jihad movement and Hamas itself only pop up after, of course, the reverberations of the Islamic Revolution were felt in the area.
All right, sorry to interrupt you. We're just fresh out of time, but thank you so much. Brent Yonkers, historian and journalist from Hasselt, Belgium, and from Walnut Creek, California, Rick Sterling. Thank you. Pleasure for your input, investigative journalist. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Vitavoy and the team. It's goodbye.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
And European poll has found that almost 70% of American workers thought Joe Biden's economic policies had either hurt the U.S. economy or had no impact, including 33% who said they believe the president's policies had hurt the economy a lot. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Citing data from consumer surveys and analysis on food insecurity and grocery shopping behavior, the website Axios reported food banks have found themselves amid a rock and a hard place as donations are plummeting amid surging demand. Divert Inc., an impact technology company, has found that inflation and mounting grocery prices are preventing Americans from making donations during the holiday season. The company's report says only 25% of respondents said they are more likely to donate during this year's holiday season compared to years past. Those who are donating less to food banks this season cite increasing food and grocery costs as the number one reason driving their decision. The technology company also revealed that the current economic climate in the United States prompted 72% of the American public to change their grocery shopping habits. 51% of respondents said grocery prices are forcing them to cut costs in other areas. What's more, 25% of consumers expressed anxiety about their ability to afford food in the next 3 to 6 months. 30% said they are now buying less fresh food like produce as prices bite. According to Divert, 85% of respondents believe that food insecurity countrywide has surged since the COVID-19 pandemic. Furthermore, 63% suggested that the United States is far more food insecure than the latest United States Department of Agriculture data indicates. According to the United States Department of Agriculture data, food insecurity started climbing in 2022 for the first time in more than a decade, with 44 million Americans living in food insecure households last year, which constitutes a 31% increase since 2021. Out of this number, 13 million American children were food insecure in 2022, a 44% spike since last year. For its part, Feeding America, a network of 200 food banks, cites surging demand for food assistance across the United States. A network of 47 food pantries in Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, has registered a 50% increase in visits. Morgan's food banks in Oregon have also seen a 50% surge in demand this year. A survey by Parents Together Action, a non-profit family advocacy organization, shows that 7 in 10 lower- and middle-income parents are struggling to afford food ahead of Thanksgiving. According to mainstream U.S. media, it's the first holiday season where people in need are enduring growing pressure within the federal government's pandemic-era food assistance, which was halted last March. Sputnik News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Minutes from the Federal Reserve's latest policy meeting on Tuesday, 21st of November, U.S. inflation remains unacceptably high after nearly 2 years of monetary tightening. Referring to its Federal Open Market Committee, the U.S. Federal Reserve said the participants in the meeting stressed that current inflation remained unacceptably high while claiming that it had moderated somewhat over the past year. The U.S. Central Bank also suggested it could resume monetary tightening after holding rates unchanged in 3 straight meetings of the Federal Open Market Committee in July, September, and November. While Wall Street is clamoring for interest rate cuts to begin in 2024, the U.S. Federal Reserve did not address that matter. However, the Federal Reserve claimed economic data showing a significant retreat in inflationary pressure would be all important for it to change course on interest rates. The meeting from the Federal Open Market Committee said all participants judged that it would be appropriate for policy to remain at a restrictive stance for some time until inflation is clearly moving down sustainably towards the committee's objective. Participants stressed the need to see more data indicating inflationary pressures were abating to be more confident of price increases returning to 2%. Inflation measured by the so-called Consumer Price Index, or CPI, hit a four-decade high of 9.1% during the year to June of 2022. By October of this year, though, the Consumer Price Index had moderated to just 3.2%. Yet, that number remains well beyond the central bank's 2% per year inflation target. The minutes added, participants continued to view a period of below-trend growth in real gross domestic product and some softening in labor market conditions as likely to be needed to bring aggregate demand and aggregate supply into better balance and reduce inflationary pressures sufficiently to return inflation to the 2% level. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story and tells us more. In the latest sign that the US president's economic record could undermine his re-election prospects, only 14% of the American voters believe they're better off financially now than they were when Joe Biden took office. A new opinion poll found that almost 70% of voters thought that Joe Biden's economic policies have either hurt the US economy or had no impact on it, including 33% who said they believed the president's policies had hurt the economy a lot. Only 26% said his policies had helped the economy. The new monthly opinion poll conducted for the Financial Times and the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business will seek to track how economic sentiment affects the race for the White House. In 1980, Republican Ronald Reagan famously asked voters whether they were better off than they were 4 years earlier, setting the stage for his landslide victory over incumbent Democrat Jimmy Carter. A similar opinion poll conducted for the Financial Times 4 years ago showed that most Americans felt they had not improved their financial position under then-President Donald Trump. But their pessimism was far less pronounced. In November of 2019, only 35% of voters believed they were better off under Donald Trump, while 31% said they were worse off. The new opinion poll results showed that inflation continues to cloud the Biden campaign's efforts to convince voters of Bidenomics, the president's strategy to rejuvenate the country's industrial sector and reverse years of middle-class wage stagnation.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Resistance movement releases more Israeli captives in return for 30 Palestinian prisoners in the seventh phase of a swap deal with the regime. An Israeli captive in the Gaza Strip holds the regime's prime minister responsible for killing his family in indiscriminate airstrikes on the Palestinian territory. And a new report by the American media says the United States has provided Israel with more than 70,000 weapons consignments since 1950. Thank you for joining us. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has released more captives under a swap deal, which is part of a truce agreement with Israel. Eight captives consisting of two minors and six women, including dual citizens of Mexico, Russia, and Uruguay, were freed in the seventh round of the exchange deal.